Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hillstring Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And we got
the man in the room, right?
Yes.
The legend.
The legend, Donald Duck Sharp.
Yep.
How about that? How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
We're honored to have you here.
Honored to have you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. It really means a lot. Now, we've talked a little bit beforehand in how important it is to document this.
Yes, sir.
Right? Because it gets lost in history and evil. I think people need to know that true evil exists.
Absolutely, 100%. And I guess before we really get into anything else, Donald Duck Sharp. I love the little nickname there.
That was some of my cousins gave me that.
Yeah.
Way back junior high school. And then a lot of people picked up on it.
Yeah.
Some of them called me Duck Sharp. And eventually a lot of it just kind of faded away.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, that's what Willie referred me to as Duck.
Yeah.
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 Tell them where you're from, Mr. Sharp, and how you got into law enforcement, or a little bit about yourself.
I'm from a little area over Barker's Corner, north of Covington, about 8 miles. Right. Born and raised right there. Lived in St. Tammany Parish all my life. Right. And got interested in law enforcement. And I don't really know what reason, I just did. And a couple friends of mine were talking about it, and we went to some meetings at the sheriff's office one time. They were recruiting junior deputies. So let's go. I was 16 years old.
Yeah. Wow.
We didn't do anything but do stuff around the office and help and stuff.
Sure.
I got into that when I turned 18, I became a reserve deputy.
Yeah.
And done that for 4 years. Until I decided that, hey, maybe I do want to do this the rest of my life.
Right.
I drove a truck cross country for 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I decided one day, I said, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
May 14th, 1977, I slipped into poverty.
Right. And nobody does it to get rich. Yeah, that's right. For sure, right? Law enforcement profession. So the bug bit you. It was the same way for me. It wasn't about getting rich or anything. It was the greatest show on earth, though. Either you loved it or you were one of those cops that were scared and needed
yeah, you had to a ringside seat.
Right. Yeah, it was greatest show on earth.
It was there.
Greatest show on earth. So 1977.
Yeah.
And you went full time.
Full time. Back then we used to start in the jail. Everybody started in the jail.
Right.
And on the correction side. And when I went up there, I think I stayed 9 months. And Willie and Joe Vaccaro, Willie were doing time then, parish time.
Yeah.
Not state time, parish time for his misdemeanor clown acts that he'd done, nothing that would get you hard time. Anyway.
He was one of those frequent flyers.
Narcotics.
Always in trouble.
He was a frequent flyer.
Right.
And so I went to basic training February 78.
Where was that at back then?
Dalrymple.
Really?
Over Baton Rouge or Pleasant Hall.
Yeah, but that's where I went.
Yeah, Pleasant Hall.
That's crazy that was 20 years.
It was an experience.
That's at LSU, y'all. So
I came back, went back into jail, and my buddy had started at the same time I did, John Bonnell. John came from Baton Rouge PD. Good guy, good cop. I learned a lot from him. Right. Same age. And eventually I got in patrol. Sometimes right after I came back, it was assigned to a shift with Sergeant Lewis Wagner and John. And Lewis Wagner was killed in 1978, and John was killed in 1979 in a narcotics deal.
Horrible.
So that kind of made you think a little bit, is this really what I want to do?
Right.
But anyway, kind of picked up things and went on. And I went back into jail for a refresher course, I guess you could say. The sheriff transferred me back up there. Sheriff George Broom, I worked for three sheriffs. Yeah. I was in the jail, and this time I'm up there working. Willie and Joe Vaccaro had transferred from Angola to finish some time that I think he must have owed St. Tammany. I didn't really know. But they were both trustees,
Right,
yeah.
And
wow.
Doing that thing. They said, we fix a roll out here for a long. We'll roll out. Eventually they did. They got released. I worked night shift. They got released, and I'm working in the jail. And that's when really started picking up big time. But to back up just a little bit, I knew Willie when he was a kid, when he was a young kid, teenager. Right. Yeah. He didn't go to school very long. And he was raised with what I call a bunch of hoodlums.
Right.
In a little part of Covington there where he was born and raised. And his father was in the penitentiary, so he didn't have a father. His mother was a good person. She really was. She tried.
Right.
Tried hard.
Every parish has one of these families.
Prior to that, we had stopped Willie a couple times, and Lewis had written me some tickets, and he was in an old white Comet with a windshield crusty in on it. Mm. Matter of fact, it was 2 days before Christmas at a Winn-Dixie parking lot. And he wrote the tickets, and the windshield that was caved in later came to play because he told me what it was. And that was going to be one of the victims that he ran over and killed and buried. Now, that person's still unsolved.
Wow.
Unknown.
But he told you he did it.
And there was two of those.
Right.
But he was going to settle the deal with me on those as we go through it. But anyway, up in the jail working, and, you just hear things about crimes is going on. They had a kidnapping, and so I got a little bit, bits and pieces about it because they didn't share anything. If you worked in the correction side, you didn't know anything at all until they brought somebody to you.
Right.
They didn't share no information. Now, so anyway, I'm going and I hear that they had made an arrest on the kidnapping of Mark Brewster and Debbie Quavers.
Yeah,
and it was Joe Vaccaro and Robert Willie. I said, "Wow!" So I continued on doing my job. They were in jail in Texarkana, Arkansas. Yeah. I think they arrested them in Hope, Arkansas. And Texarkana, Arkansas, the courthouse, if you cross one hall, you're in another state. And you cross
another yeah, state. That's right. The line runs down the middle. It's
going to be one of those nightmares, you know. So I was just off one day and I got a phone call to go to the if I could go to the district attorney's office and see the assistant district attorney. I said, man, what have I done? You know, I mean, I said, I don't, the few cases I had pretty right. much done. I get ready, I go down there on my day off. And I walk in, I said, I come to see assistant DA Herb Alexandria. You know, they said, right down this hall. We walked down the hall, opened a big door, and there was about six people in there and Herb Alexandra. And I said, this is going to be good. And, you know, I was a little bit nervous.
Right.
And I knew Herb. I knew one other person. I can't remember who all was in there, but they started introducing myself. First one that walked up to me was Richard Newman, who was a detective of Washington Parish Sheriff's Office. Great, great guy, and a real good police officer. And then to my right was Ronnie Pierce with the Louisiana State Police Detective Division. And then Herb, and I think Mike Vonador was the DA's office. He was in there. And just small talk they started, and Richard Newman asked me, he said, hey, we understand that you may be able to talk to Robert Willie. I said, yeah, I talked to Willie. You know, we think he's responsible for the murder of Faith Hathaway. They found the body up there in Washington Parish. Mm. I said, yeah, you're probably on the right trail.
He's probably good for it.
Yeah. Because it all was going along with the Cuevas kidnapping. And then, you know, anyway, I said, I could probably do that. Well, they went to and asked the sheriff if I could go to Texarkana and interview him. He said, no. So they come back and said, the sheriff said you couldn't go. I'm not surprised. Okay. So I went home and said, hey, what's your phone number? You know, I call them. So they called me 2 days later and said, hey, will you go on your day off up there? I said, yeah, I'll go. I said, how are we going? I said, well, how fast you want to get there? I said, soon. I told me the date they wanted to go. I said, I got a fishing trip lined up in the morning. I'll make a trip. So they set up the date. I met him in Washington Parish, and they flew us up there in the Louisiana State Police helicopter. Yeah. It was myself, Richard Newman, Ronnie Pierce, and then Big Mike Vonnevoort got up in there somehow. I don't know how he got up in there with his big legs. Walter Smith was the pilot. We flew to Texarkana and get to Texarkana and land. And the FBI agents everywhere and state troopers, I said, So they pick us up and they swoosh us off, you know, here we go, over to the courthouse. And the big old room with big high ceilings, you know, just there's like four or five FBI agents. I said, now look, you know, when you go in there to talk to them, you got to read them the rights. I said, we do that in Louisiana, too. And so they said, you know, Richard Newman was talking to me before, and we just have a small talk, he and I. And he said, listen, he said, the sheriff, which is Willie J. Blair at the time, he said, gave me some expense money. And the sheriff said, if you get a confession out of these people, he wants me to go buy you a steak dinner, and here's a $100 bill.
Hey.
And there's a Texas kind of deputy standing there by him. I said, hey, where's the best steakhouse in this place?
Make us a reservation. Yeah. Make us a reservation.
And then Newman said, you're kind of cocky, huh? Oh, it's positive.
Oh, that's right. And,
Ronnie Pierce, he just laughed. So they said, which one do you want to talk to first? I said, bring me Joe Vaccaro, which I knew Joe was going to, you know, deny anything and everything. Right. That's what he did until you really got him caught.
Right, yeah.
And they had some pictures of the decomposed body, and they took him in there. This big room, it was high ceiling again, you know, kind of looked like a dungeon. And a little desk in the middle. And I'm talking to him. I said, Joe, you know, he said, man, how you doing? He said, what you doing up here? I said, you know, you and Willie done left a trail, man.
Oh, yeah.
I said, I come up here. I said, "You know this girl? You ever seen her?" "No." And veins popped out in his neck. "No, you know, I don't know nothing about it." We talked for a while. I said, "So what you think Willie's going to say when I ask him?" "He's going to say the same thing." "Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to call you back in here. But I'm really not interested in what you have to say after this point. You know that. That's how it works." "No, I don't know nothing about that." "Okay, good." So he left. They bring Willie. And Willie come in there. He said, "Duck, what you doing, man?" "Just come check it on you, Willie, see how you doing." And he lied to you. He said, "Well, that's good." So he sat down. And the deputy took the handcuffs off the front. I said, "You can take them off the front. Just leave his shackles on. He can't run anyway." And he stood outside the door. And he said, what's going on up here?" I said, "I just come to talk to you." I said, "You done got yourself in a bad fix this time, didn't you, Willie?" "Yeah, man." He said, "It's over here this time. They got me." I said, "Well, what'd you do all that business for, man? What brought all this?" "Man, I don't know. We were just doing every kind of drug we could find or steal." "Yeah." "And we just did it." I said, "Okay, all right." We just kept talking. He wanted to talk about truck driving, which is what he done. And I listened to him. I said, "Look, you know, I'm here for a reason. Yeah, I think I got a pretty good idea what that reason is." Yeah. I laid those pictures out there. I said, "You know her?" "Yeah." "When I seen her, she looked a whole lot better." I said, "Well, imagine that, you know. You know, I had done read him his rights. You know, right. He signed them." He said, "Yeah, we'll talk." I said, "You want to tell me about it?" "Yeah, we'll talk about it." So we didn't have a tape recorder. And we talked to Huck, and he just went through the whole thing. They had picked her up at the she got in the truck with them voluntarily at the Lake Theater Disco, the lounge in Mandeville. And they went riding, said they were smoking weed, and wound up at Fricky's Cave. A lot of people don't know what Fricky's Cave is, but Robert Willie knew Fricky's Cave very well because he frequented that place when he was driving the trucks hauling gravel out of those gravel pits. Mm-hmm. So that's how he knew about it. And so it went on, and he said, "We just rode around, was smoking dope and doing this and that, drinking. And we took her up there to Fricky's Cave." I said, "So the intentions was to take her up there and rape her." "Well, we're going to take her up there and have sex with her." She was going to volunteer. I said, "Okay." Anyway, he said they walked out in the woods and she was with them. I know they didn't drag her out there. She walked. They made her walk considerable distance. And that thing had heels and caves. And, and he said each one of them raped her, and then he was sitting on top of her holding her hands, and Joe was stabbing her in the throat, and she was trying to, slashing around. And I said, "Well, what did you say, Willie? Did you stab her?" He said, "No, I didn't stab her. Joe did that. Joe done all the stabbing. I held her." And so he said, "I told her one time to behave." I said, "You're going to tell somebody who's getting killed, stabbed to death, to behave? Wow. What else am I going to tell her?"
Right.
You know?
Crazy.
I said, "Okay." I said, so we talked more about what y'all done, what they done. Well, we knew she's dead, so we got in the truck and left. Had to go get all the blood off of us and stuff. I think they went to his cousin, Tommy Holden.
Yeah.
Tommy Holden is where they wound up with Debbie Quavis once we get to that part. Anyway, they done that. I said, "Well, look, let's get this pinned down on tape."
Right.
"All right, let's do it." I said, you ready to do this?" "Yeah." "While they get all that ready, me and you talk." "Okay." So I came out the door, the deputy's in there with him. They was all standing there. He said, "I need a tape recorder." He confessed to it. Or the FBI, he wouldn't even talk to us. I said, "You're not dressed right, man." "Yes, I mean, so if I'm going to do it." And I looked at Richard. I said, I said, got a reservation. So I go back in there, I think another 35, 40 minutes, got his confession on his tape. I said, now bring that other clown back in here. So we're sitting there, the tape recorder right there. And I said, hey, I just got done talking to Willie. I said, I got bad news for you. He confessed to y'all killing Faith Hathaway. Nah, man, yeah, he didn't. I said, listen to that. I thought he was going to throw up. He said, no, I didn't stab her. He did. I said, hold up. Let me get another tape so you can tell me all that tape. So we took his confession. And that was it.
He blamed the back on.
Yeah, he blamed the back on naturally. Willie. He said, no, Willie. And I would not doubt even today that each one of them stabbed or cut her. Because Willie was a knife man. Right. He really was. Huh. And so we go out. They take him back. And I told Willie, I said, look, I'll be seeing you. He said, all right. He said, take care, Doug. I said, all right. I said, you think anything else you need, just call the sheriff's office. They'll get a hold of me. Yeah. Okay. Well, we leave, and we go to the steakhouse and eat a good steak. Get in the state police helicopter and was flying back home. And Mike Vonador, he agreed to stay and get the tapes transcribed and signed and all that stuff. I said, that's fine. And Vonador sat in there for a little bit. I asked him, I said, Willie, I said, Vonador wants to sit in here. He said, and he told me, he said, who is that goofy son of a bitch? I said, he's a detective for the DA's office. He said, big dummy. He said, if it's all right with you, I don't care. I said, okay, that's fine. He's going to sit and just listen. So if he gets to aggravating you, we just shut it down.
Yeah.
So he stayed in there. I think he asked a couple of questions, you know. And but anyway, it worked out. We got the confession. We got what we went for.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest with you, Willie wasn't worried about, you know, getting the death penalty.
Yeah.
Because he had three life sentences coming
from
the feds.
Yeah.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So anyway, it goes back on. He gets the feds. They jumped up real quick. They gave him, he pled guilty. They gave him three life sentences. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
On Debbie Cuevas and Mark Brewster case. So,
which in that case was just absolutely the fact that they tied that guy to a tree.
And you know, and we talked about that case because, see, that wasn't my case. That was a Mandeville City police case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't venture off into that a whole lot because I didn't know what they had done, what they were doing. I knew that they was they charged Willie with it. And Willie told me, I done it. But he said, they got me.
It's like not.
So anyway, we go on and we get back, and Willie got his time. And I really didn't know a whole lot about the case still, even after they got back. I know the sheriff, once he found out that it come out in the paper that I got a confession statement from Willie, he wigged out who took me up there and how I got there.
Right. Yeah.
And Sheriff Willie J. Blair, Washington Parish Sheriff's Office called and said, I took him up there. I had him go with my guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Richard Newman and Ronnie Pierce, a couple of we became really close friends after that, our whole career.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
that's pretty awesome.
Newman, he told me, he said, you got it. He said, that's all I'd say. He said, look, you need to stay in touch. Said, we will. So when it gets time for the trial, they had both of them at Washington Parish. I had to go get Willie and bring him from the feds to here.
Yeah.
I went and got him. I went and picked him up in Marion, Illinois. I said, really, what you doing to Marion, Illinois? Oh, that's that security shit. I said, he said, they found me on the top of the building up in Leavenworth when I was up there. I said, imagine that.
Yeah, trying to escape, huh?
You know, because Willie had escaped from our jail once when he jumped off the top of it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And broke his ankle.
Really?
Him, matter of fact, him and about 12 others.
Wow.
And he was at a little grocery store up on Barker's Corner near there, pool table and stuff that he frequented when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Well, the ladies, the people that owned it was really good people. Mr. Robert Weimer, he told me, say, hey, call the sheriff's office, tell him to send Donald Sharp out here. You need to talk to him. So I go out there, see what they want. And he's sitting in a chair drinking a Slitz beer with ice on his broke ankle. He said, I'm ready to go back.
And it's beer, huh?
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah,
I always said that I believe everybody should have to start out at corrections because you get to know the people that you're going to be dealing with on the street.
Right. I knew a bunch of bad people up there.
And that really helped me out a lot in my career. Because you had the rapport. I mean, you're not in there punishing them for what they're in there for. Yeah. You treat them with respect and –
you're just running a cheap restaurant.
Babysitting.
You take their food to them.
Right.
You take their medicine to them. It's a cheap restaurant.
Yeah, and you don't have to be a hard ass, and you establish that mutual respect, obviously, like Willie had with you.
Yeah. Right? Trustees, you know, they make trustee status.
That's a big deal, right?
Now, would you make Willie a trustee after you found out what he was really about?
Yeah. Right.
And that was the kind of people we were surrounded with 30 trustees working in the jail, the correction side. So anyway, they come back. Washington Parish Jail it really wasn't fit to put a person like him in Joe Becerra.
Yeah.
So the sheriff, Sheriff Kenya, he was in office now, and I was back in patrol, and so when they had the trial, had both of them going on at the same time in Washington Parish. We'd bring him home to our jail every afternoon.
Right.
Him and Vicara both, we'd bring them in separate units. And we had people, I was assigned to Willie. I said, but I can't be assigned to him when I'm testifying.
You know? Right.
So anyway, we do the trial. I remember that night at midnight, right before midnight, they came back with it didn't take them long. First-degree murder on Willie and second-degree murder on Joe Becerra. One juror, held out on murder on him.
Yeah.
So we go back, put him in jail, do some things that we had to do, and then I think on this one here, he had to go back to Marion, Illinois, and shipped him back up there. I said, well, that's the end of this. You know, it's over with for my part. Yeah. Go back patrolling. I think it was about a year. Sheriff calls me in the office. He said, look, I need you to go to Marion, Illinois and pick up Willie. I said, for what? He said, they overturned the sentencing phase of his trial because of something one of the prosecutors said. I said, so we just got to do the sentencing phase.
Right.
I said, okay. He said, you need to go get him in the morning. Said, okay. He said, the deputy sheriff from Washington Parish is going to go with you, Lack McNeese. So I picked him up and we went, got Willie. He said, Duck, how you doing? I said, I'm doing good. Get in, man. We put the cuffs on him. He got in the car and away we went. And so we get there. He said, bring him to our jail. I took him to St. Tammany. I said, I want to pick you up. And I'll take you to Washington Parish, and then you're going to go back and forth every day, me and you. I said, all right, you're going to behave yourself. Or I'm going to tie you up real good. I ain't doing nothing shit. So we was up I had to sit there. Of course, Debbie come and testified again. And as we waiting for the jury, didn't take long to come back.
That's so the listeners know that Debbie is a surviving.
Right, the survivor, Debbie Cuevas. Right. And of course, her and Mark Brewster both survived.
Right.
And we get into that. I'll tell you what Willie told me about that case, too. He went through that whole thing with me, they did. Anyway, we get there, and he said, Willie, even in the jailhouse, they still know what's going on. I said, Willie, I'm working a case on Roxanne Sharp with the city police. He said, yeah, I know who killed her. He was in jail. Yeah. Don't make no difference. He said, Perry Taylor killed her. That's his cousin.
Mm.
I said, well, I need something
right,
to go to get of. Perry Taylor on right. So I can get him to where I can jam him. He said, get us a he said, I don't want an Oyster Po' Boy. That's what I want for lunch. I loved Oyster Po' Boys. I went and got, got one. They brought it. He sat at that desk and eat it. I said, well, start talking while you're eating now. Mm. He said, yeah. He said, Perry, me and Perry killed a guy. We met him in the tavern. We got in his van with him to go buy some dope. And we took him out by the river, by the power lines, which is where all the dopers used to go. And I knew that for a fact. He said, I said, well, so you killed him. How you killed him? He said, we drowned him. He said, he was a big old song. He liked to drown me before we got him. I said, just like that. So they drug him and put him in the van. And they put him out, just left him in the woods under a big old tree. I said, when was this, Willie? He said, it's been a long time ago. It's been 4 or 5 years ago. I knew we never had found a body out there.
Right.
So he said, well, when we go back home, you just drive by that and I'll show you. I said, you ain't walking through the woods with me, dude. No, we're not going to do it like that.
Yeah.
So weird things happen in this craziness. We pulled up to the sheriff's office, and it was late that evening. All the detectives were leaving. I told one, I said, look, I said, going out here and look for a body that Willie told me that they had killed this guy over some marijuana. They started laughing. Yeah, you going to believe that? And they all left. And the sheriff said, what you going to do? I said, I'm going out here and look for that body. All right, go on. Take Willie upstairs, locked him up, put him, he had his own cell, put him in the cell. I said, I'll be back. All right, you'll find him. Go downstairs, and this guy standing there, I said, can I help you? He said, yeah, well, real country accent. He said, I was just down here checking to see if y'all ever found anything on my brother who went missing down here 5 years ago. I said, really? I said, his name was Dennis Hemby. I said, really? Yeah, no. I said, you going to be in town for a couple of days? Yes, sir. I'm going to be staying down there at the Holiday Inn. I said, I want you to check back up here with me in 2 days. Okay. I don't think any more about it. Right. We go out there, Lat and I, we're walking through the woods. Look, and there's a big oak tree about 100 yards off in the woods. So I'm going to go. I walked over there. There's a pair of cowboy boots sticking out of the straw in the grass.
Come on.
Nothing but a skeleton.
Wow.
And his belt buckle.
Wow. That's crazy.
I said, well, now we got to walk a half a mile to go get the radio for the police car.
They didn't have cell phones back then and all that.
Lat said, phew. He said, you walk, I'll wait. So I go up there and called and told him what I had. Well, here they come. Detectives and everybody. And the sheriff drove up. He said, y'all leave. You didn't believe him a while ago? You laughed at him?
Right.
Go home. This is his case.
Yeah.
So we go out there. We got the crime lab come, picked up all the bones and stuff, and, you know, doing what we're supposed to do with it. And like I said, I've never been a detective, but I've been a police officer.
Right.
So anyway, we go through this, and we get this all the bones to the crime lab and all, you know, where he was laying the pictures, and go back and say, I bet you that guy that came here to the sheriff's office, you know, this is going to be his relative right here.
That's crazy.
So we was looking. We didn't have nothing. So we went to checking around. We asked him. The guy came back and said, did your brother ever go to a dentist down here? Look, I said, yes. He said he had to go to a dentist in Mandeville. So we found him. We took this girl down there. Yeah. The tooth that the dentist worked on was missing.
Really?
Huh.
So we go back out there. We digging around where that skull was, and there it was.
Come on.
We got the tooth.
That's crazy, man.
And we,
that's an unbelievable story.
The lab people put it in a little bag. Yeah. We headed to that dentist office. He said, that's it. His name is Dennis Hemby.
Oh, my God, man.
Wow, here we go.
Man, what are the chances that is people coming in
at just the on exact the day time
that Willie told you he
that
did?
That was really what was the weird part. You know,
That gives me goosebumps. Yeah.
So
we don't believe in coincidence.
Right, yeah. No, I always say there's no such thing as coincidence in a homicide.
So we then after that we got him identified, and he was killed, like I said, 5 years prior to that.
That's crazy, man.
And so the chief of police in Covington, I called him to him and said, look, I said, I got something to get Perry Taylor so we can jam him up on the Roxanne Sharp case, which was the city's case.
Right.
And he said, good. All right, Sharp, we get together. All right, okay. And the sheriff told him, said, just work this case. You know, don't worry about your shift. They got enough people. I said, okay. So we go and get him identified. And the brother came back. I told him, I said, look, we got you. We found your brother. He's dead.
Yeah.
He's been dead for 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So and I said, what funeral home would you want to take him back to Missouri? Well, he said, well, we poor people. We don't have no money to get no funeral home. Can I just take him with me? I said, well, I don't know. I have to find out. So we asked the coroner's office. They gave him a slip to transport the body back.
Come on.
And it was in a box. I said, that your brother. I appreciate it. He put him on the back seat.
Wow.
And took off to Puxico, Missouri.
You just can't make that out.
Just like that.
That is an amazing story.
And I damn sure didn't know that the coroner could release the remains
to sign
like
a paper
that.
So he could transport
That's crazy.
And it's, you think about how much money it saved the family.
I know. Thousands of dollars.
So, anyway, I go back up there and I told Willie, I said, we got it. Got him identified. He said, I said, what kind of vehicle was he in? He said, it was an old blue van. So we started doing some looking into it. Myself and John Bonnell, my partner who was killed, we recovered that van on a grass road not far from where the scene was. And it had a dent in the door. And we just said, yeah, we hit a pine tree with that old van. Uh-huh. He was sitting on a bucket driving it.
On a bucket.
But you know, that van was his and it was in the computer, but nobody ever went back and ran those vehicles back in the day to see if the van was just sitting there. And he was a missing person case, and it was just sitting in a wrecker yard.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, it's crazy.
For no reason, when you go out there and start running wrecker.
Right.
Anyway, you got that done and got with the city police and got Willie down, took a statement from him. He still told me how they killed him. The Perry was a big, heavyset guy. He sat on him until he drowned him. Mm. And they got 10 bags of marijuana is what they got off of him. Huh. And Willie would kill you for dope. He really would.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, we go back, put him up in the jail. I said, the next day they go and we arrest Perry Taylor. Got him up in the covered in the police detectives and stuff doing their interview with him. He was denying it and crying and stuff and denying that he killed Roxanne Sharp. Well, he still denied that. Anyway, it rocked on. We booked him. He stayed in jail. His mother was Willie's aunt.
Really?
All right, so they were tied together.
Yeah.
That same little group of hoodlums.
Right? Yeah.
And so Willie was there, so we had to take Willie back to Marion.
Right.
And the sheriff called, and I said, why don't you call and sit there and let us keep him till we get some of this straightened out. So the sheriff didn't say, yeah, you keep him. He's your responsibility.
Right.
So we told Willie, said, you're going to stay here for a while. We got to get all this business squared away. Yeah, okay. So we started talking, he and I, just small talk. And he said the reason he turned Perry Taylor in because his best friend Tommy, I can't remember what Tommy's last name is, was his girlfriend. Yeah. It wasn't Tommy Holden, it was Tommy Watson.
Okay.
That was one of Willie's buddies in a little small town, time hoodlum too.
Right.
So anyway, I get that part. We never did get Perry Taylor, he never would own up to it, but I mean he was very close. But his lawyer walked in and said, "No, this is all stopped."
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it was.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So Anyway, I told Willie, I said, you would testify against him in court? Yeah. I said, so my star witness is a kidnapping and a murder.
Right, right.
You know, that's what we're looking at in the DA. DA's always say, I don't know about all this. I said, well, he done admitted to everything he's ever done.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I said, he's just wanting to get his business squared away and move on. I said, I don't know. So anyway, they let Perry Taylor plead to manslaughter. They gave him 15 years.
Yeah.
He's still in jail, in and out of jail. He can't never get straight.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sitting there talking to Willie. I said, Willie, I said, you give me that one there. I said, I need to talk to you about some more stuff. Let's do it. So, you know, we just talking. So after talking to the sheriff, I said, the sheriff said, listen to me. If you're going to do this, you assign, you're going to be assigned to the detective bureaus. I'm not a detective. I said, you're assigned to them, but you answer to me. Okay. Let's do that. So, we had those old pagers, you know, and you got the message call the office.
Right.
So Willie was the only one in that jail. A whole year of my life I spent with him. Anytime he decided he wanted to talk to me, they gave him a phone, and he paged me.
Yeah.
Just went on, should go up there and talk to him, see what he wanted. And it was, most of the time it was just small talk, but it started leading to other
bigger
cases.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there talking to him one day, and I looked. I said, Willie, you got a tattoo of skulls on your wrist. He said, yeah. I says, that's people you kill? You're pretty good, but you're slow too. Yeah. And I asked him, I said, well, what is the center blank for? Because each one of them had a line touch them jailhouse tattoos.
Right.
He said, that one right there. He said, it's for the district attorney. I'm going to kill him and cut his head off in front of his kids when I get out.
Holy shit.
I said, what did he do to you, Willie? Well, he prosecuted Willie's mother.
Oh.
For aiding him. She gave him a ride.
Yeah.
And actually, she went to jail for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
And that done him.
Right.
He died mad at that.
Right.
Because nobody messed with his mother.
Wow.
And he said, I'm going to put his skull right there.
Crazy.
I said, what makes you think you're going to get out? He said, you never know. So anyway, we go on and we're talking about Lewis Wagner, which was a sergeant for the sheriff's office who was ambushed and killed. And we talked about that case. And he said, yeah, he said, he would give you things to go look up and find. Instead of just outright telling you, because he was buying time
not to go back to
the federal penitentiary.
Right. He's a,
so I was working those cases that with Lewis, and he finally told me, he said, here's the people who killed Lewis Wagner. I was there, but I didn't pull the trigger.
Mm.
Well, we got all of the stuff that we could get, and they all, every one of them was indicted. And the district attorney said, your star witness is a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
And going to testify against these. I said, well, one of them's in the penitentiary. So let's go. I'm ready to gamble on it. I said, I believe he's telling me the truth because he wants to get all this stuff done, laid out on the table.
Right.
He's not lying. He's telling the truth.
Hey, you know, the crimes like that aren't, the witnesses aren't all church-going people, right? They're bad people most of the time. Yeah.
So anyway, We arrested those four, and it kind of, and the other two detectives with the sheriff's office, you remember the Henry Lee Lucas?
Yeah.
Well, they had Henry Lee Lucas. He claimed he killed Lewis. And when that all came about, the district attorney told me, he said, well, I got to dismiss these charges because they lied. They did this. They did that. There ain't no way we could take it to trial.
And Henry Lee Lucas confessed to every murder from here to Canada.
So that messed that one up. So anyway, Willie told him, said, well, about the one with the white comet where the windshield was busted out. Mm-hmm. He said he ran over him because he stole the guy's dope and he ran over him, and it was a dead-end road, and it was a parish road, and he came back out, and the guy was standing in the middle of the road, wouldn't move, so Willie run over him.
Mm.
And it, when he, of course, the body flips. And
it hit the windshield.
Going through the windshield. Yeah. He just threw him in the trunk and drove him somewhere. He said, he wouldn't tell me where. He said, I buried him. It can't be too far away. But I never did get the opportunity. And he said the other one that he killed was, it was a hitchhiker. He picked him up on the interstate. And the guy had 3 bags of marijuana. And I believe that he's in a gravel pit somewhere in Washington Parish because he said it wrapped him up in a chain and took his marijuana. So never found him, you know, so much you could do about it.
Right.
And we looked at all missing persons around, you know. That
right.
So, of course, a hitchhiker, a loner, is hard to get anybody. Anyway, do that. One day I'm sitting, it's like 2 days before Christmas. I was with my wife, and we was at some of her aunts in Covington. The pager goes off. It's a call, man. So I called up there. Willie said, hey, man, where you at? I said, I'm in Covington, man. It's 2 days before Christmas. So, yeah, I know it. He said, you need to come on up to this jailhouse up here. They're fixing to have a damn jailbreak. I said, yeah, what? Yeah, they're fixing to go right now. I said, are you going? No, I ain't going nowhere. When I pulled up to the sheriff's office, they was jumping off the building. They were running down the stairs. They overpowered the deputies and all of them had them. And I think there's about 16 or 17. I'm talking about bad people.
Right.
And we got them all except one. And I walked in that, and Willie was sitting there looking at me out of his cell. I said, why didn't you go? He said, they ain't killing me.
Yeah.
You know, he said, I walk out that door, they're going to shoot me. They ain't even going to ask nothing. They'll shoot me.
Right.
I said, you may be right.
Yeah.
Maybe. So, you know, that was another thing that made me really believe that Willie's wanting to get his business straight
know,
with me and with, and to tell people or somebody will know what he did.
Yeah.
Really how bad of a guy he was, but he wasn't that bad. He was a bad dude.
Yeah.
So they do that. They do the jail and we kept him there. And it got close to the end. I said, Willie, I said, I think we're fixing to have to take you back up to up the country. Yeah, I know. I think so, too. I said, so the sheriff told me, I said, look, I want you to take him back in 2 weeks. I said, we're not making any headway on these other 2 bodies. I know we'll work on it eventually. He'll come get me again. So we took him back to Marion, Illinois. And Faith Hathaway's mother and stepfather, I mean, they were persistent. You hear me? Hey, anybody who would listen, they wanted Willie killed. They wanted him killed.
Right.
And it was a fact that Ronald Reagan was the president. They would call that White House. We want you to turn Willie loose and give him to the state. And that went on for a long time. They called once a week.
Wow.
And they would come see me and say, oh, you got to help us get him back down here. So Vern, they were both getting old. Vern, I said, I don't know what to tell you, man. Ain't nothing I can do. I said, he's got to serve his federal time or they have to turn him loose and then we'll get him.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sitting there 6-7 months later, 8. Sheriff called me and said, hey, I need, about 8 o'clock, I said, come in my office. I need you to go to Marion, Illinois and get Willie. I said, what now? He said, they turned him over to the state. Ronald Reagan signed the paperwork. They said,
Come on.
Turning Willie back over to the state.
I didn't know about that part.
Wow.
And there was a lot of, you know, high-powered meetings that went on.
Right.
I think what they said, the sheriff told me that Reagan wanted assurances that the state was going to do what they're supposed to do.
Right.
So I said, I go get him. Uh-huh. You got to be there before 7 o'clock tonight. So I called him old buddy Latt. I said, come on, let's go. We're going to get with you. I pulled up to Marion, Illinois. He was in the lobby. They walked him out there. He had a little bag, a pair of boots on. And he looked at me and said, Duck, he said, what the hell's going on? I said, we're going to Louisiana.
Uh-oh.
I had some papers I wanted him to give him, so I gave him them. He said, you know, I can't read that. I said, I got another set up there. We'll read it out loud while we're traveling. So we took off. And I just told him in jest what it was. He said, they fixing to kill my ass now. That's exactly what's his words. He said, they going to kill me. He said, I thought I was protected, but evidently I wouldn't.
Yes, indeed.
So we get back home. We bring him back to St. Tammany. And he and I had a lot of talks in between the time that he had to go to Angola there. And we never did. He never would give up those bodies. He was hoping that that would extend his life.
Playing.
And I told him, I said, look, I'm at a dead end, man. I said, you got to give me something to get the dogs off of me. I said, look, I keep you alive as long as you're giving me what I need to help me and help the people solve these issues that you've caused.
Yeah.
Well, so I think it's about 2 months later he went to Angola. I think if you go back and look, I went to Angola to see him when he was on death, when he was in the death house.
Right.
Right before they done it.
Yeah.
Walked in, he said, hey, Doug. Hey, bud, how you doing? He said, gee, I ain't doing good.
Yeah.
He said, they finna get me.
Yeah.
I said, I believe they are. I believe you're done.
Yeah.
He said, I said, Willie, all that stuff you told me, all the information you gave me, is that true? Yes, sir. Every bit of it. I just wish I had enough time to tell you where them other ones was. But we're just going to leave it as it is. He said, Louisiana's going to kill me. I said, yeah, they are. I can tell you they are.
Yeah.
In about 3 days, probably. He said, why don't you come? I said, no, you got to get on that list way ahead of time. So I didn't go.
Uh-huh.
I said, I'm not going over there. So anyway, I left. I said, well, Willie, I said, this is the end of the road for us, huh? Yeah. He said, I'll see you around.
Wow.
I left. I think Willie was executed, one of the fastest ones in the state of Louisiana, six years.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he was executed.
That's fast. Yeah.
So, but you go back to when he was talking to me about Debbie Cuevas, about the kidnapping. Of course, that case was wrapped up and done. And he just wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I asked him one day, I said, Willie, I said, let me ask you a question about when you kidnapped those people. He said, man, we was on drugs so bad, we didn't even know what we were doing. But I knew one thing, we done kidnapped a pretty one, prettiest woman I've ever seen in my life. And they put him in the trunk and her in the car. And they went over to Alabama to the first exit, right, the Foley.
Yep.
And went out in the trees in the median there. They tied him up and shot him and cut him back across his neck. They thought he was dead.
Yeah.
Go back, come back, and of course they raped Debbie and all this grassroots. They come back. She's the reason she's alive today.
Yeah.
The way she finally took this and said, she told Willie a couple times, no, you not either. Well, they got back to Covington. They went to his cousin Tommy Holden's house.
Yeah.
Well, Tommy Holden and Joe Bacarach said, well, we got to kill her. Let's go ahead and kill her and get this over with. Willie said, oh, no, hold up, boys. Ain't killing
her. Hmm.
Ain't happening. And then I asked Willie, I said, that was the only person right there that was going to be a witness against you. I know. So why didn't you kill her? And he sent a statement. He said, Duck, she was just too pretty to kill. That was what he told me exactly. Right. It's on tape. She's too pretty to kill.
Crazy.
So wow. When they took her to not far from her home in Mattisville and let her out of the car.
Yeah.
They were on the run then.
Yeah.
So.
And he was alive, still alive. I can't remember his name. In Alabama, yeah, I went back and.
I wasn't involved with it, but
right.
I found out later that once they did find out when with Debbie, when she got home and they called the police, and you know, and it really everything started happening a lot faster because even she told me when her and I were visiting, we're gonna have another visit. She told me a lot of things that she didn't know. She said, well, I want to know about the behind-the-scenes stuff. Right. So I'll have to come back, and we'll just have to have dinner again.
Yeah, that's amazing. So,
and I haven't seen her but a couple of times since all this happened. When she wrote the book, Forgiving the Dead Man Walking,
yes,
she brought it to my office and signed it and laid it on my desk. I was out of the office, and I come back, and she said, the lady brought this out. And I didn't even get to see her. Great book. I don't know if you read it or not.
Yes, sir.
It's awesome book.
Yeah.
And when you start reading it, you can't put it down. So anyway, just things that she didn't know. Because, you know, a lot of times we as police officers do things what happened to you? And you tell them. And we never go back and sit down when it's all finished and say, look, this is how this whole case evolved. Yeah. She doesn't understand today how that went. How the vaccines, the things went. So that's something that we're going to talk about, you know, when I go back up there.
I love that.
Yeah. And she it's amazing. She just wants to do it. She's, you know, it's something that she's done put behind her. She's done great with her life and her husband and her two kids. And
That's
amazing. You know, she's awesome. Got out of college. Amazing.
She's selling real estate now.
How about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, how close were you in age with Robert Willie?
With Willie? I think Willie and I were about 7 years apart, something like that.
He just strikes me just from hearing you talk about it and the research that I've done. It seems like he almost had sort of he had a mad respect for you.
All right.
Someone that didn't have respect for many.
No, or much. He didn't. He didn't respect nobody. But He and I never got crossed. I mean, I arrested him a couple of times.
Right.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, look, Willie, you do what I tell you and you'll be fine. You don't. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
He said, I know what you do. And it was like the time sitting in the chair. He broke foot after Jake escaped from the jail.
Yeah. He got slits.
He said, can I finish my beer? I said, yeah, drink it quick. Let's go.
Yeah.
Put these handcuffs on. So
we're
there. Wow. But on other times, you know, that dealing with him, you know, even like when he was in the jail, I treated him with respect.
Right.
And I told him, I said, if you don't show me the same amount of respect, you and Joe Vaccaro, any of you convicts, you're going in the back.
Right.
And I guess that's really where it started. And plus, when he was young, he used to come when I was driving the truck before I went to work at the sheriff's office. He always wanted to go with me in the truck. So I said, no, you can't do that. My insurance won't let me do that.
Right. Yeah.
He said, well, you know I can drive. I said, yeah, you're 15 years old.
Yeah.
He didn't even have a driver's license, you know. But eventually he got his license and did what he wanted to do. I mean, he couldn't read a map, so he couldn't go nowhere but to the gravel pits and the cement plants and the Metairie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, strictly by memory.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't read an exit sign. And he just knew that's where you get off.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, what about Sister Helen Prejean? Did you ever
have I never met Sister Helen Prejean. I know she said that Willie read the Bible a lot. Willie might have looked at the Bible a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah.
It would take Willie a long, long time to read one sentence.
Yeah.
He signed most of his, when you read him his rights and stuff and different forms, he signed it with an X.
Yeah.
You know, and if he did try to write his name, you couldn't tell what it was.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, Sister Helen Prejean was over there talking to him, and then I don't know how that even became about, you know. I mean, I read the book, and I watched the movie.
Yeah.
I can tell you, this is the funny part. I went to see that movie.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, we went, and it was right after me and one of my deputies got in a shootout, and we were both shot.
Yeah.
Went and seen that movie about 3 weeks later. I was sitting in the theater, and when Sean Penn's picture popped up on the screen, I just hollered, oh, shit. He looked just like Robert Willie.
No kidding.
Yes, he could have been his twin brother.
Really?
Yeah. That little pointed nose.
Yeah.
My wife said, shut up. You're in the movie. Okay.
Yeah, wow. That's interesting.
He looked just like him.
Wow.
And I got some of the pictures when Willie was with his mugshot profile. Yeah, I can tell you, I get that stuff dug out. I don't have a problem with bringing it over.
Yeah, I'd love that.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. And the respect to the end. I mean, when you saw him in the death house, he was like, why don't you come on and watch him.
Yeah.
That's
that was what he wanted. But I said, no. I said, look, I'm not on that list.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
I was saying that for him, that's the last communication he had. He wanted
to that's exactly him to right.
be executed. Yeah. It's crazy.
Man. Well, and it's interesting, for me, okay, I'm sitting here across from two people that in their police law enforcement experience, the execution of two horrible people happened. You with, obviously, your people and you with
Gerald Bordelon.
And, that's unique. And just have mad respect for both of you justice.
We got to get you back to. I got to get you on my other show.
I'm going to tell you
all the Texas stories.
And he's good.
I'm not disrespecting because I call myself an old cop. A lot of old cops have all the stories, but not many of them can tell a story.
Right.
You, sir, can tell a story.
Yeah.
You have the gift. The thing about I lived this story.
That's right.
And that's what a lot of people say. You need to write a book. I said, I don't know how to write no book.
Right.
I said, how about I just sit and talk to you about it?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, we talk about a lot of things. See, I came to work at the sheriff's office at the end of the old Dixie Mafia.
Right. Yeah.
They were all in our jail.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They was all up in that jail, yeah. St. Tammany.
Yeah.
And what didn't get killed.
Right.
Well, in that big case out of Biloxi with the you remember that?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I was just – and then the gypsy camp robbery in St. Tammany where they robbed a gypsy camp.
Yeah.
With Kirk C. Nix, that bunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was going to an end. And you know as well as I do, that Dixie Mafia is the reason that they started ROCIC.
Right, right.
To keep track of these moving criminals.
That's right.
Criminal
and Wallace Ladd was the chief deputy of St. Tammany Parish for 40 years. Yeah. He was very instrumental in getting that ROCIC thing up and running.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Kurt C. Nix, of course, he was a strip club. Didn't he own a bunch of strip clubs in Biloxi? Yeah. And he was part of the reason, the casinos came to Biloxi, and a lot of people were trying to stop that, and the Dixie Mafia was instrumental in getting them there, some people say.
Walter Barnett was part of that group. I don't know if you knew him or not. And he's out of prison.
Yeah.
He beat three life sentences. He just got out recently, and he was Robert Willie's cousin.
Really? Wow.
He's living in Minnesota somewhere.
I just hit my head. There was a statement on Willie's daddy in Angola saying something about he's a rat, they need to kill him anyway or something like that.
Yeah. You know anything about that?
When his daddy came out of Angola, came home?
Yeah.
And he shot two people?
Yeah.
He shot him at a bar room. Yeah. He shot him at...
Just you can't make that kind of bad blood.
No, he got out of penitentiary.
Yeah,
and the person, the bar that he was at, was Carl Bennett, Robert Willie, Daddy, shot Carl Bennett and his brother, and killed the brother and Carl lived. And he was at that bar. In the parking lot, and I don't know what spurred it off. I happened to be off that night. And there was two guys fighting. And Willie pulled out his overalls, old pistol, and started shooting at him. And he shot two of them.
Wow.
And everybody else crawled under cars and stuff.
Wow.
And he left.
For no reason. He just shot them because they was fighting.
It's all they know.
Yes.
That's all they know. How they deal with the problems.
Every parish has a certain group of families like that, the outlaws. Hey, would you come on my other show?
Real Life, Real Crime.
And we can edit this out, but the being shot, and I know it's got to be hard to talk about your partner got killed.
No, it ain't very hard at all. Because look, you know what? The way I look at it is we went home and he didn't.
Right, yeah. And I think – but. To get to memorialize, just like you're doing your memories on Willie, then, the your partners and whoever else that I think as a cop, when we can sit down and talk about that, I think that'd be fire.
I do too.
And important, like you said.
Most gunfights in law enforcement go 3 feet,
right,
3 seconds.
Right.
This one started at 3 feet and went to 20 feet, went to 50 feet, and went for 52 seconds and 16 rounds fired.
Wow. Crazy, man. 52 seconds is like 52 minutes.
That's a long time. 52 hours.
Yeah, a long time.
Sure.
Well, we thank you so much for coming on. It's been an honor for me.
It was a real honor for me, buddy.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Is this good enough for you?
We didn't say a word the whole time. You know why? Because you were that good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, shit. I'm like, listen to this cat roll.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you, man.
Well, thank y'all for showing the interest in it. And you know what? Hey, it's a story. And
right.
Some people may like it. Some people may not.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I guarantee you they'll all like it.
If this isn't the greatest episode we've ever done.
I don't have no reason to lie about it because Willie was Willie and I was myself, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, the steak dinner was good.
Yeah,
that's how I was going to ask you about that. Yes, indeed. And get to fly in the state police helicopter back then. That was a big deal, too.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. It really was. And, let me put this at the end of it. We were coming into Texarkana, the airport, and I'm looking over to my left, and we're coming in like this, and Richard Newman still laughed about that. Boy, he passed away a while back. Richard was a great guy. And he still laughed about that to the end. He said, I looked over and I said, Walter, what you going to do about this guy over here, this blue eyes and this plane over here fixing to run over us? He went, shit. And we done a nosedive.
Right.
What happened is that the air traffic controller gave us clearance to land at the same time he gave that twin-engine Cessna.
Oh, wow.
And Richard, he laughs. He said, blue eyes, I'm sure. I said, that's what he
looked like. He is exactly that close. He didn't tell he had blue eyes.
He landed that helicopter. We had to wait on him because he went to that control tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the red ass.
Yeah, he was walking across there with that state police uniform, and one of them Arkansas troopers was running alongside of him. He said, where are you going? I'm going up here. And you could see him in the tower.
Tearing him up.
God, he's ripping him.
Wow.
So, but that was just part of getting there.
You can't make it up. And then, and that had been lost in history. Hey, y'all got killed in that. Willie the guy off on all of that.
Willie might have been a choir boy.
He might be walking the street.
Appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
And you tell your daughter, you said thanks. And look, when I don't know if you'd be interested or not, next time we do a live show or whatever, we'll get y'all tickets and stuff. And if you want to come.
Oh, yeah, she'd love that. She listens to y'all a lot.
Yeah,
and I appreciate her. I said, I got my little deal in the morning. She said, I know. I said, I'll tell them you said hello.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Everton.
Your host of Bloody
and Gola.
A podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
Good job.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.